listen to three-part music class. Real music. Podcast. You are listening to Real Music Podcast. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to another episode of the Frio Music Podcast. In this episode, I interview Kevin Donahue, the lead guitarist of Sun Squabby. He also has a side project, Casual Commander. He has played at Red Rocks as a headliner. He is at the top of his game, amazing guitarist. It was awesome to catch up with Kevin at Sonic Bloom 2018, and I hope you enjoy this interview. Stay tuned.
Is this loud enough?
Is this thing on? Yeah, you're definitely good. Kevin, thanks so much for sitting down with me, man.
Dude, really appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me.
Go ahead and introduce yourself. Say your first and last name and bands that you're working with today.
Of course. For everybody out there, my name is Kevin Donahue, and I am a Denver-based guitarist of a band called Sun Squabby. We play electronic, funk, fusion, rock music, and not here at Sonic Bloom this weekend with the homies, playing a little solo project. It's called Casual Commander. It's a little bit more on like the funky disco side, but that's what I do. I play guitar and more guitar.
Nice. Well, I also saw you on stage with Matty O'Neill.
Yes, that's right. So the thing about being in Colorado is like a festival like this 3-4 hours from Denver, there's a lot of Colorado-based musicians here that I've known for years. And, you know, everybody's out here. I have all my equipment. We have tons of songs we've written together. And it's like, let's jam. Like, this is the perfect setting to be creative and do stuff like that. With Maddie, I played a song that I wrote with her maybe like 2 years ago. It came out on her first album. And also just kind of improvised on two brand new songs that she just wrote. So a lot of that happens here too. So I played with Matty O'Neill Friday, and then I played my set. Last night we played with Late Night Radio, who's another friend that I've been writing music in Denver with for like 5 years, and you're like, let's do it. Ended up playing the whole set, same kind of thing where we played some old songs that we wrote, we played some new stuff that we've been writing, and then there's a lot of stuff where I'm just openly creating and just improvising on top of what he's produced. And there's really not a better place to do that than a music festival, just to like have that freedom and just play what's on your mind, you know?
Absolutely. Well, that's amazing. I mean, you're at a festival and you're playing, you're hopping around stage with different artists under different names. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, hustle and grind, I would say. But
I would agree with you that it is a hustle, but it's what makes it that grind, like, I don't even want to say worthwhile. It's just like fulfilling. It just feels really good because all I really want to do is play music, and to have friends that invite you into their project too, and let you do your thing because you're adding into each other's, you know, what you're creating together. It's pretty special. It's pretty special, man. I feel really lucky. Tonight, I get to play with the Sonic Bloom Orchestra, which is it's myself and Anthony from Papadocio playing guitar. And then we got both members of Yodo / Michael Travis and Jason Hahn from String Cheese. We got Two Bob Crew, Dirt Wire, Vibe Squad's playing bass, and Jamie Janover. I think we'll play Dale Dulcimer or just conduct and be awesome. But same kind of thing. It's like to be able to just be invited into that. I think a lot of the reason that happens is because I'm always wanting to do that. I'm always hoofing around with the guitar. I've been doing it for like 4 or 5 years at all kinds of festivals, man. Nice. Gets out of hand sometimes, but it's really, really a privilege, man. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, tell me about yourself as a kid. Where did you grow up and how did you pick up the guitar?
For sure. Well, I grew up in Longmont, Colorado, which is like, it's about maybe like 5 hours north of where we are right now, in like closer to Pueblo. But Longmont was a really, really chill town. I had a pretty easy life growing up, man. I was very lucky to have a great music teacher in high school, and I played different instruments. I played like drums and saxophone and marimba, which is like a giant xylophone. And
how'd you get your hands on all those?
I had a great music program, man. Okay. I was very lucky to go to one of the few public schools that's still, because it's one of the things that gets cut first.
Yeah.
They're not cutting gym class, they're cutting music class. And I was very lucky to go to a school that had a very, very well-funded program, very great teachers. And I was just always really encouraged to it. And what happened with the guitar was there's the beginning jazz band in my freshman year, and they needed a guitar player. And I'm like, I've never even really thought about this, but my older brother had one. So I'm like, I'll give you $30 for that, and I'm just going to go suck. I'm just going to go show up and try out for this jazz band. And, like, nobody else tried out. So I got it. I got the spot. It was first chair guitar, only chair. But I really had no idea how to play at first. You know what I mean? I was translating, reading music on saxophone to learning chords and, like, all that. And I just had a really great teacher, man. He just really helped me find a way to teach myself. And, yeah, so that was really, like, the big catalyst. His name is Daryl Abramson. Give him a shout-out for sure. He just played trumpet with us at Red Rocks a couple of weeks ago.
That's great.
And actually, we just put out that recording from our Red Rock show yesterday.
All right. Where can people download it?
It's on our Spotify for Sun Squabby, and it's on iTunes and SoundCloud, and everything's free. Right. But you can actually hear my old jazz teacher playing trumpet with us, and that was really special to invite him back after, like, I've been out of high school for 10 years. You know, I've hardly even seen this guy, but we keep up, and we chat, and, like, was kind of waiting for this day to come where I could be like, hey, do you want to play a gig with me now? Like, I'm like, you encouraged me to be a professional musician someday, and I'm doing it, and I want you to be a part of it. So that was a really special thing for me. But yeah, I was just really lucky, man. I had great support. My parents were always very supportive of it. And again, the music program at the school that I went to was huge, man. And the really sad part is that, like, they're our kids all over the place that makes me worried aren't going to get that same opportunity, because again, like, the first thing that gets cut when the funding, you know, starts to go missing or whatever is the arts programs.
That's true.
And it's a shame. It's just, like, seriously bums me out. It's like, it changed my fucking life. Sorry. But yeah. It changed my life having that kind of program.
And one, I guess, positive of, like, future technology is that some of it can be learned online, which is helpful.
Right, absolutely.
You can watch somebody finger the chords online, and you can kind of teach yourself little bite-sized YouTube videos.
Absolutely. I mean, that was a huge part of it, just being able to have access to that. Kind of knowing, like, where to get started. Again, that was, like, having a good teacher and having... I'll give a shout out if he ever hears it, but his name's Alan Richards. He was a senior in high school when I was a freshman. He gave me the one lesson that I've ever taken. And, like, he went out of his way to be like, hey, like, you should learn how to do this. And, like, this is how you read a tab, and you can go on the internet and find a tab for any song you want to learn. Right.
Ultimate-guitar.com.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's on the hot bar for years now. You know what I mean? And so I would just, my dad was a radio DJ, so he had pretty epic record collection. And I started playing guitar, and he would just feed me, like, Tommy Bolin and, like, Jeff Beck and Stevie Wonder and, like, just these gem records, and be like, you should just try and learn how to play that. And I'm like, you know, playing by ear, learning a lot that way, but then, like, being able to have access to the information, it's a total game changer. You couldn't do that 20 years ago. You'd have to go to the guitar store, find the book for that particular album you're trying to learn, and hope that it's transcribed the right way. And if it's not, you just burn $20.
Yeah.
And you're a kid in high school trying to learn how to play guitar. It's like, it's tough. It's definitely a lot easier nowadays.
So tell me about, I mean, you're you love a challenge, clearly, because you jump from different instruments, and I've seen you on stage, and you guys just push each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, tell me about what it takes mentally to, you know, pick up a new instrument or learn a new song or pursue something, a new endeavor musically.
Well, I mean, obviously it's a lot of focus. It's a lot of self-discipline and being able to, like, quiet yourself, sit down in one place. And basically you have to suck. Like, any new thing that you are going to learn, the first time you're going to do it, unless you're, like, amazingly miracle talented, which is one in every billion people that's born or whatever, right? There's 8 billion people in the world. There's only been one Jimi Hendrix. There's only been one who picked up a guitar and was like, wham, you know what I mean? And I feel like a lot of people have that expectation when they try to learn something new, where they're like, ah, like I'm just not getting
frustrated.
It. I'm not, and that frustration is natural and it happens, but it's like having that discipline to quiet that voice in your head and be like, just keep doing it. Just push through it, get the repetition in, figure it out. Maybe take a break, you know, like having that, that discipline to sit down and practice and try to learn a new skill. And it kind of works with anything, but for me, it's always been instruments in my life, where when I started making music electronically with Ableton, it was like, at first I'm just playing around. I have no idea. There's a lot of red lines everywhere. I'm like, that's probably not good, but we'll figure it out. And, you know, for months you're sitting there being like, I don't know why I can't figure out how to get this sound. I don't know why I can't, like, I want it to sound this way, but I can't do it.
Yeah.
And if you just don't stop trying, eventually you're gonna figure it out, and then that's like the most rewarding feeling in the world, when you really work hard at trying to get a new skill, and then you're like, oh well, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
You know, like the first time that you ever rode a bike and you're like, oh god, I'm scared. Yeah, and I fell down 100 times, and then you finally get it and you're like, this is awesome. So that's happened to me more times than I can even think, and I'm really grateful for that. But
nice.
I feel like that's, it's not the challenge so much. It's that feeling of like knowing that you challenged yourself and you accomplished something. Which, and if you go too hard about it, I can be really hard on myself sometimes too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really, that's like the most satisfying feeling in the world to me. And that's why I feel like I always try to put myself out there and sit in with people that are better than me, that have been playing longer than me. Because it's going to make me raise my standards. It's going to make me learn something. It's going to make me probably make a mistake and like think about it, analyze it, do it better next time. Like, you have to challenge yourself, or otherwise you're just, it's stagnant.
Yep,
you know, it's the only way to like evolve and grow. So
nice. So you're going on tour. Is that correct?
Yes. The band is going on tour, in the fall time. It's kind of all over the United States. It starts in, late September.
All right. Does the tour have a name?
Not so far yet, because we're about to unveil what our album is going to be that we're releasing with it. We're in the middle of writing a 12-track album, and it's honestly just super exciting, super creative time. Like, we're going to put out a couple tracks, or maybe just like a single here and there over the summer, and then we just started coming up with a ton of ideas, and the next thing you know, it's 3 weeks later, and you're like, well, yes, we have like a whole album of songs.
Nice.
So we've been recording and finalizing that, and that should be out with the tour, but we're waiting to unveil that with everything.
That's super exciting.
Yeah.
Can we talk about just a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how you made it.
How we made that song.
Yeah, yeah, kind of how it came to be, and, you know.
For sure. I came up with like kind of the bass, the first chord progression, the melody and stuff, like the kind of like the skeleton of the song. It was called Just a Little Rain, because I'm terrible with coming up with titles, but it was like kind of a rainy day in the studio, and I was just kind of like bumming, and you know, you gotta get some juice out if you're kind of like, you know, gloomy and sad, and you're like, I want to make some like sweet sounds that like make me feel better. So that was kind of how it started. And then that song was really the first song that I got to write with our new bass player, Josh, that we really like sat down together and finished and wrote a whole song. And it just kind of started coming together really naturally like that, you know. So we got it to that point, recorded the three of us on it, and then started recording our friends on it too. So it has tons of other people on it. There's two horns. There's Eric Luba is on keyboards. Just kind of like became this thing where this is the first kind of like new sound that we're working on, and it's just very organic. Like, so we put that out by itself because it's like, this is just a little bit of like the new thing that we're doing. And then the artwork that went with it was like this bear getting into this honeypot of just like, he's just getting a little taste, you know, like he just wants a little bit. And again, like the sweetness, I feel like that song makes me think of like sugary, nectary things. So
it's got a great feel.
It's the sweetness, you know, it's like kind of laid back in the middle. It gets up to the breakdown, and then it's like funky dance party at the end. And it just kind of came together really naturally, you know?
And what programs were you using? You've mentioned Ableton.
Yeah.
Is that your...
It's kind of like a combination of platforms. Yeah. The process changes all the time, but like I'll start writing songs in Ableton. Okay. I'll take them to the boys. We'll write other parts around it. And then either record it in one instrument at a time or sometimes go in and live record it and just like play over the track and record our parts. And then I'll rebuild the track around what we've recorded. But we go in and do that in Pro Tools. So that's all in like an analog studio out by Red Rocks, which Josh runs. It's called Scanhope Sound. And it's where the fusion style comes in. It's like this old school recording technique and like very rock based kind of stuff meeting with throwing it back into Ableton. And then we layer in synthesizers that like you can't replicate any other way. Like digital sound has come so far that it's like just use all the tools that are at your disposal. But it's Ableton is primarily like I've messed with Logic a little bit, but it's like I just understand Ableton is the one that works for me.
Yeah.
And I feel like people use different ones, like using Logic to produce and then playing live with Ableton, or some people use FL Studio, man. You know, it's like whatever tools work best for you to get what's in your head out, you know, onto paper, so to speak, onto tape, you know, then that's what you should use. You know what I mean? But for me, it's like I got Ableton 5 years ago, and I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Nice.
Like, I can play, like, 10 instruments at once. This is amazing, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what worked for me.
Now, when you're shaping the sound of your guitar, you're using a lot of pedals. Is that correct?
Yeah, I use sort of on, like, a general basis, it's a pretty minimal pedal setup. I just use one digital foot pedal that has several effects in it. And normally you would have, like, maybe 10 or 20 different effects laid out. On like an analog pedal board, which is what a lot of people use. But for me, I just, again, like the tools that you use are really less important than what you're using them for. And if you're able to get your voice through them. And Grant gives me shit about it all the time. He's like, you still using that janky ass pedal? I'm like, it sounds good, man. And I know how to use it. You know what I mean?
True.
I know how to make it do what I want to do. So it works really good for me. I have thought about upgrading a lot, but it's actually like, four effects that I use on my guitar throughout like a whole set. It's like a harmonizer, a little bit of compression, a little distortion when you need it, usually not, and then reverb/delay, right? Just very simple. I like it that way because I'm doing a lot with my hands too, and I'm kind of like semi-conducting at the same time, and it's good to keep it simple. And again, it's like whatever you use, you know, the same way I would imagine like a photographer. People use different types of lenses. People prefer different types of cameras or film or et cetera, because that's how they can get it to look or sound how they want it to, you know?
Absolutely.
What I mean? So I don't know. People get particular about it. I used to be a total gear nerd, but then I kind of got tired of talking to those guys because they'll just never shut up about how many pedals they have, et cetera.
And then it's never ending. Like, and then
does that really make you a better player though?
All,
does that really make you better at playing? Does that really make you feel like you can do what you're trying to do better just because you have the newest, nicest thing or this one particular kind of, like, this is what everybody uses, so I have to use it?
Sometimes the creative limitations really add to the final result.
I have always been, like, taught like that. Again, going back to, like, my teacher in jazz, it's like, less is more, and sometimes really simplifying things can open up more channels creatively. Like, you'll actually come up with something a lot more justifiable to what you're thinking than just like doing the craziest lick that you can play. You know what I mean? I do that all the time. I was writing these songs this week for my set for Casual Commander, and I had my friend Melissa Peterson playing violin with me, and we're like writing melody lines over this track, and I'm, you know, like come up with some crazy thing. I'm like, yeah, that's really fun to play, but do I even want to listen to that? After I like recorded it back, I was like, let's take like 12 notes out of it. She's like, you always want to chop it down and simplify it. I'm like, yeah, because this isn't like a shred metal song. Like, it's like if you keep it, you know, but it, and again, it's just situational. Sometimes you do want to go off the deep end. Sometimes you do want to play all the notes or make it complex. But yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, take me back to Red Rocks. I know it's recent, but...
Please, take me back there, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
Amazing show. Awesome lineup through, you know, start to finish. And you guys really brought the heat. And it just looked like you guys were out there having a blast and yet at the same time trying to one up each other, and like, and you guys just like are on the highest level. So it was awesome to watch. You played so well together though.
Well, thank you, man.
You really seem to elevate each other.
It that's how I would describe it. It's not so much like one upping, you know what I mean? Because then it gets mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't mean
and
that
my bass player
way,
can play like a lot faster than I can play, so it's embarrassing. If I try to one up him on the speed or shit, he'll be like, "Oh yeah, what's up?" So, but it's really like, we elevate each other. There's a lot of energy going on stage, and like, especially at a show like that where it's like we've prepared for this our whole lives. This is our fourth year in a row doing it. And you just feel very comfortable where you're at. And we just came off a tour prior to that show. That was the Just a Little Tour. And just a little tour. And we, you know, we had just played 20 shows in a row together and just feeling really comfortable, really confident. And being able to step into that environment at Red Rocks where you can see everyone's face and the sound is perfect and you're in this absolutely unreal place. You kind of get to take that in more when that comfortability is there, and that's where the energy comes out, because you're having fun. You know what I mean? You're listening to each other, and you're just like, you know, not worried if like, oh, you made a little mistake. It's like, oh, no, I'm gonna do it on purpose. Like, what's up? And then be like, oh, but nobody knows. And like, I don't know. It's honestly, I've tried to describe it 100 times. It's impossible to describe what it feels like playing there. It's the craziest feeling you can experience as a musician. Like, just feel very connected to the entire audience. Again, the sound is perfect. You think about all the other people that are still there. There's a picture downstairs in the tunnel that's like the Jimi Hendrix Experience, like a trio, like guitar, bass, and drums set up exactly how we're set up. And Jimmy's standing where I stand on the stage. I'm like, you know, you get to kind of experience that a little bit more when you're prepared, when you're not thinking about the details too much and you're just kind of feeling the night, feeling the moment.
Yeah.
But you have to have a balance, because otherwise, if you're not preparing enough, if you're not thinking about the details, then you're not going to be able to experience the moment, you know, because you're missing things. And
so, yeah, tell me about that. Like, it seems like a tightrope of the mind. You know, we're overthinking something, and just letting it flow, and being too off, in the clouds and missing.
I like how you describe it as a tightrope, or like at the top of a very very steep hill. You want to be sitting right on the top in balance. And it's very easy to go to one side or the other. I think that there's benefits to both aspects of it, that you should always be aware of your surroundings. You should always be aware of your intention, why you're doing something. You should come prepared. But you shouldn't stress out about those things to the point where you're missing the reason that you're doing it in the first place, which is because it makes you feel good, it makes other people feel good, and you generally enjoy how that feels, like I think we all do. But yeah, you have to find a balance in that for sure. I've been really, really thinking about that a lot lately. And I'm very happy, you know, having that balance. So yeah, it's something I think that it's very easy to go to one side or the other at any point in your life, but I mean, we all do it, you know.
Nice. And what about on stage? You know, when you get your creative freedom of a solo.
Right. That's what I would like make the analogy to in anything. That's what I would compare anything to. It's like when I'm on stage and you're just having fun. You know what I mean? You're just in the moment. Like, oh, there's no rules. We're jamming. Yeah. Like, that is definitely an amazing feeling. You want to have that aspect in your mind that, yes, this is really fun. And like, wow, listen how good this sounds. And like, man, these people I'm playing with are really cool. And like, you have to be in that mindset. But at the same time, like, if you go too far to that side, then you're going to miss the cue, man. It's like, remember to look at the drummer, though. Remember to like make sure you know what's going on. Remember to like tune your guitar when you're not playing. Like, you know, like little things that come with experience. The more you do something, you pay attention to the details more, but you can't go too far to one side or the other, because if you're just thinking about details and you're like, I gotta be right with the drummer, like I can't fuck up right now, you're not gonna have any fun.
Yeah.
And nobody watching you is gonna have any fun, because they're like, that guy looks like he's about to have a panic attack.
Yeah,
you know what
it's
I mean?
It's true.
But you have to be right in the middle with it.
All right, I appreciate that.
For sure.
All right, two questions. Final questions. One, what advice would you give to a musician starting out today, or a younger musician, maybe a kid that hears you and wants to be a musician when he grows up?
I just want to say one thing to that, and that's I know a lot of people who have played music for 20, 30, 40 years, and some of them are still doing it, and some of them are still doing it at a very high level. Some of them are doing it bigger than they ever imagined or intended to be doing it. And then there are others who don't. And the major difference, barring other circumstances, because, you know, there's really nothing that can hold you back if you don't stop. You never know when that next opportunity could literally be the next day. If you break up your band and then you get the phone call, like, you know, you can't ever give up. And I've wanted to give up tons of times. I've been doing this for 11 years now, trying to prove to my parents that I didn't need to go to college because this is what my passion was. And I think I'm pretty good at it. And, you know, I just didn't stop. I didn't let somebody tell me, like, you're an idiot. You shouldn't do that. And tons of people will if you're playing music. It's not an easy career to make, but it's a very doable career to have if you don't stop. If you just always put yourself out there and try to get better, it's going to happen. But so that would be the one piece of advice I would give anybody starting out there. You should just don't stop.
Great piece of advice. Okay, last question.
Okay, and then I have a question for you, Robert.
Okay. Should we
but
do
you
that?
First. You
okay.
First.
I was just going to say, what shout-outs do you want to give? Links, websites?
For sure. And yeah, just one more time. It's Sunsquabby. You can get it all on Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, our website, sunsquabby.com. We've got cool T-shirts that help us pay our bills because it's hard to play music out there. So you should check it out if you're interested. And we're going on tour in the fall, so I hope to see some of you out there. So my question for you is, why is kindness so surprising? Why is it surprising when somebody goes out of their way to be kind to you?
It's a difficult question. I guess it's all about expectation, right?
Right. And so why do we live in a world where the expectation is that no one will be kind? Why can't kindness be our standard?
Yeah.
That should be the standard. It shouldn't surprise you that you dropped your wallet and somebody walking behind you grabbed it and walked up to you and said, hey, you dropped this. You could have just stolen it. But it's surprising. You're like, oh, my God, you're not a terrible person.
Yeah.
Why is it like that? Like, we should be kinder to each other, I think. But
absolutely.
Yeah. So
it's a
tough question.
It is a tough question. And, I think it goes back to your mindset, you know, and your expectation of somebody.
Right. And would you say that, like, in a festival environment, it's much more conducive for people to be kind to each other?
It's true. And your story about the wallet happened to me.
It was a day and a half later. Right.
And
they
turned
it
into lost and found with all the cash in it.
Right. And that's just one example. Maybe, you know, buying somebody a bottle of water because they look thirsty, or like buying the person behind you to drink, or holding the door open for somebody, or whatever it is. Why is it so surprising when somebody does that for you?
It shouldn't.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like at festivals, they see a lot more patterns of kindness, so they reciprocate them, and they start acting kinder too.
True.
And then we go back to the real world, to our daily lives, and you forget about that because that environment we're in doesn't promote that. You have to bring it to the environment. You have to just exercise kindness, and people around you will see that too, I think. But I don't know. It's just a thought that I've had from this weekend.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I appreciate the thought, and I appreciate the question and the interview.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Kevin. I really appreciate it, dude. Hell yeah.
This episode was brought to you by Frio Labs, bringing to life creative, innovative, and always custom website designs. Need a website? Learn more at friolabs.com. Need a discount? Use the coupon code FMPODCAST for 10% off of your order. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.